You're listening to the Music Manumit Podcast for May 1st, 2011. Learn more at musicmanumit.com. Hi, and welcome to another Music Manumit. I'm Tom, and with me as usual is Doug. Hello, Doug.
Hello, Tom.
And today, we have a guest, and I'm going to say that this is probably the first time that I've actually sought out a guest. Usually, you're the guy that goes to find the guests, or you're usually the one that's on top of it way more than I am. But today, I'm very excited to have a guest that we've spoke of his website before, but recently, I have just started using it a lot, and since I appreciate what he's done so much, I wanted to have him on the show, and we have Chris Acapente of Films with Chris. How are you doing today?
Films by Chris.
I'm sorry. Films by Chris.
What did you say the first time, Tom?
I said Films with Chris, I think I said. Which I think, you know what? That's actually, there used to be a guy on YouTube called Cute with Chris. Are you familiar with that one?
I'm not.
He doesn't do it anymore, but he was essentially like a struggling stand-up comedian. And and he had a thing that was called Cute with Chris, and what he would do is people would send him cute pictures of their cats, and he would essentially make fun of them. And it was actually very entertaining video series.
I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, it's still on there. He doesn't do it anymore, though. But, I really liked that.
This is the Chris Manumit podcast.
Yeah.
Talk about everything Chris-related. Chris-cross.
Sounds great podcast.
Yes. Well, the reason we have you here today is because when we first started this podcast back in, I don't know, like August or something like that.
It was before that.
Was it before that?
Yeah, it was June. Yeah, it was before I went to the World Cup, so definitely early June.
Oh, all right.
I think we did the pilot in May, actually. Not that that matters. But.
No, it really doesn't. But one of the first things we talked about was we were scouring the internet and still trying to get our footing on, Creative Commons music and things that were out there. And one of the sites I came across was the Films by Chris. And the whole list of things like instructions on how to use Ardour and video editing and all that kind of stuff, and I was like, oh, everybody should check this out if you're looking for tutorials. Well, I've been meaning forever to set up my home studio. I've been telling myself that I was going to do it for, I don't know, it's been like 2 years in the making now, and I've always had the stuff, but I've never really just hunkered down and did it because my guitarist runs a recording studio, so never really needed the actual need. I would kind of tinker. And so recently I finally did it. I'm finally doing it. I've got a bunch of gear. I'm hooking up the gear, and I wanted to use Ardour, and that's when I realized online tutorials or information about Ardour is very, very sparse or old from what I've seen. And then I remembered your website, and I've been using it, and it has been a godsend. And
great. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, it was great. I went through the whole playlist that you have set up on your site, because not only do you have the videos all separated on your site, but you also have playlists, so you can just go straight through and play them one by one. And it was genius. I loved it. And I was like, Doug, we got to get this guy on, because you've been nothing but a help to me, and it's basically we try to show people ways that they can use open source or Creative Commons tools and music in day-to-day, creativity. So that's why we wanted to have you on and talk about it a bit. So
yeah, just a little more backstory, just for anybody that's new, because a lot of these things are video. I mean, obviously there's Ardour, but there's Blender videos and video and game programming as well. And we went through back in like October or something. We were talking a lot about Nina Paley's movies and her sort of struggle to get music for her video. So our discussions of video are always came out of music, but we have talked a fair amount about the use of music in video. So for anybody who's like, huh, this isn't really all that about Creative Commons or about music, it's sort of building on some things that we've touched upon before. And that sort of brings me to Just a quick question, I guess, is I see the site is on under attribution license, but are the videos actually under Creative Commons? I think they're all hosted on YouTube. I don't even know if they give that as an option.
Yeah, I'm not sure as far as YouTube, what they do. But yeah, all my videos, and I haven't really put that on my videos, and I'm just starting to put that more at the end of my videos, that all my videos are released under the Creative Commons license. Yeah. So
is
I
it
just need to start
the
marketing.
Same attribution license that's on the that's listed on the website?
Yeah, attribution. Yeah, and I'm gonna, you know, non-commercial. Or I'm sorry, I used to do non-commercials. What I used to do stuff as now, I'm just gonna do everything for commercial use as well. Just as long as attribution, as long as I get credit for it, that's fine with me.
Fantastic.
And I guess one thing I'd like to find out is, what? How did you get started? Why did you want to start doing this site? I mean, you're uploading videos all the time, and I wanted to ask, what possessed you to do such a crazy thing?
Well, it's funny because I've done video work for years. I used to do wedding videos. I kind of stopped doing that about a year ago. I just got tired of doing it. It was always kind of a side job. And so I've had my YouTube account for a while, but it was just little films that I made and stuff. And then I stopped using it. And then I'm a huge supporter of open source and Linux and constantly trying to switch friends and family over. And a friend of mine, I switched him over, and he was curious about doing stuff from the command line. So I made like 5 little videos for him, posted them on YouTube, and sent him a link. He never watched them, but a bunch of other people started watching them. And I started getting all these comments, so I just kept doing it, and more people commented, and people started subscribing. I was like, wow, this is great. People are actually listening to what I have to say.
That's
and
really
that
cool.
was about a year and a half ago, and I think I have about 800 videos up right now.
Yeah, you've had that many in a year and a half? Although, yeah, in this past week, I think you've uploaded like maybe 10 that I can remember so far.
Yeah, I constantly have a list of videos I want to make, like ideas, and for about 3 months now, it's been up around 40 or 50, because every time I make a video, I come up with 3 more ideas, and usually it's very bad practice on YouTube to post multiple videos in a day or right after each other, because it tends to get people to unsubscribe, because it's filling up their inbox, and I used to try to just do a few videos a week, but I was just getting too backed up with videos I wanted to make, so about 3-4 months ago, I decided I'm just going to start uploading videos like crazy. And I started for like a month there, I was uploading like 3 videos a day. And my to-do list was still up at like 39, 40 things on the list.
Good Lord. Wow.
Do people suggest videos, or are they just all come out of your head?
A lot of them come out of my head, but pretty much every morning when I wake up, I have 15 comments in from YouTube, and I'd say at least half of them are questions, and so some of them will give me ideas for new videos or to clarify something I've done in the past.
Yeah, I've seen a few that you've posted where they were comments, they were responses to comments that were posted on some of the Ardour videos, where somebody would say, hey, I saw you were going along and you did this one thing, how did you do that? And then you would go through, and there are a couple where you've been like, this is how I did it. Like, I think one of them was how to use the Jack server between, Zinad FX or whatever the thing's called. I always forget what it's
ZYN
called.
ZYN Ad Sub Effect is a synthesizer I like using.
That's the one.
Because Jack is actually pretty simple once you get used to it, but I understand how complex it can seem when you first start messing with it.
Mm-hmm.
And about a week ago, I posted a video on this too, redid my audio setup, because for those of you who don't know, Jack is basically kind of like a soundboard for your computer. You open it up and it allows all your music applications to interact with one another. But when you have it running normally, anything that doesn't support Jack, audio stops working. So if you have Firefox open and you're watching a Flash video, it will stop working.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally, just about a week, 2 weeks ago, figured out how to get Jack working with Pulse Audio, which is the sound system on many Linux systems, working together. And
really?
It's great, but it gives me like 100 other options. So I'm constantly looking at this digital soundboard on my screen and plugging things from one thing to another, going, why am I not getting audio out of this? So it's great that I've got more options now. It's just, I got to keep an eye on stuff a little bit more.
Yeah, because I have to say, first of all, yes, Jack was a mystery to me forever. What I did know is that I had to close everything first before I could use it. But that was about the extent of what I knew. I mean, I come from the background of the stuff that I'm used to using is Pro Tools, which Pro Tools has the Digi, similar to the Jack thing, that it comes with a piece of hardware where you use Digi Design, I believe it's called, or something like that, that plugs into the sound card, and that also basically takes your sound card captive, and you can't play anything else in the background. So that wasn't that foreign to me, but to me that just worked like magic because someone else was taking care of it. I didn't have to deal with it. But yeah, and until I watched, like, I now kind of get Jack, and that's from watching your videos. And that has been one thing that has been like a complete mystery to me. Altogether, the sound cards on it, like Pulse Audio, I use a Kubuntu system, and I just delete Pulse Audio right away, and I just use the underlying K-Mix audio because
I used to hate Pulse Audio. Yes. just a couple months ago, but now that I've got it working with Jack, mm-hmm. I'm loving it.
Yeah, see, I'm going to have to look at that video because it would be a lot easier to deal with if I could just do that across the board and not have to go, okay, now I got to uninstall this and then set it up again and et cetera. But once you get that stuff, and I learned it from your video, it was how to get Jack, and now I'm in there, I'm connecting things. Like, the one thing that was the most most eye-opening was the fact that with Jack, I didn't know that you had to go back, even in the programs themselves, like Ardour, and disconnect the regular system sound card, and then connect it would show up on the Jack audio, like, oh, so you connect the sound card from Hydrogen or from whatever into Ardour. Because I'd be going, right. I'm playing it, the levels are showing up, but it's not getting any of the effects, or this isn't playing, and that was that was when I decided I got to get this dude on the show because he knows what he's talking about. So
I just want to say before people sort of tune out and they're like, oh, they're talking about all these Linux apps, I just want to note that Jack is actually cross-platform. Mac and Windows as well have it. So the videos are going to be on Linux systems, but presumably they would still be useful. Well, the Pulse Audio part wouldn't be, but I don't think. But they'd presumably still be useful for Mac and Windows users. And I'm pretty sure the same is true for Blender. I didn't double-check that. But
yeah, Blender is cross-platform. Most open-source programs are cross-platform. And it's just because it's not that hard to design software to be compatible with multiple systems. It's just a lot of developers don't do it. But if it's open-source, then the community can, and if the original developer doesn't, someone along come along and say, oh, I want this to run on Windows, and I'm just going to recompile it for that architecture.
Right. Yeah, Ardour is kind of odd in that way, that it's Mac and Linux, and there's no Windows version.
And recently it's been a huge push towards Mac, if I'm not mistaken.
Looking at the website, it does seem that way. I don't know why that is.
I don't know either. Yeah, I found that strange. I think that, yeah, like just a couple months ago, I want to say that I saw that it was doing that. But from what Doug had said a minute ago, talking about Creative Commons and open source and other things like that, what drew you to it? What made you become such a, I mean, I'm assuming that you're an advocate for such things because of all the things that you show how to use. That's open source audio and video and other such programs like that.
Yeah, I definitely am. Basically, I've always been kind of a geek when it comes to computers. I've been using Linux for about 6 years now. Before that, I was very gung-ho Windows. You know, and I tried doing programming and stuff there with Visual Basic and stuff like that. And I kept hearing about Linux over and over and over again. And I tried it here and there. And finally, about 6 years ago with Linux, I said, I am going to use this for 2 weeks. I am not going to touch a Windows machine. If I need to figure out how to do something, I'm going to figure out how to do it in Linux. And by the end of the 2 weeks, I was just blown away where the flexibility that came with open source to allow me to do so many more things that I couldn't do before, or at least couldn't do with ease. And I'm not sure exactly when I first heard about the Creative Commons, but eventually, you know, I heard about that. And it's basically the same concept. It's just when you have a community of people working on a project and working together on something, the more people are working on it, the faster it can grow and the better it can grow and more variety you get. And that's important when it comes to technology as far as open source software, as well as music and art. You know, the more people that can share it, the better it's going to grow and the more people are going to know about it. And I just think that's a great thing. It's basically gives no limitation to what can be done, because there's nobody telling you, well, you can't do that. If you can do it, you can do it.
I got to say, too, the funny thing is up until like maybe a year ago, which it's funny that you said your background was video, and video on Linux hasn't really been that great until just recently, and it's gotten kind of competitive now. But the first video editor that I was able to keep open pseudo stably was using Kden Live, and that was like the 0.4 version or whatever, and it even that has come a long way since then. But so I'm surprised that you would use it and go, this is great, you know.
About a year and a half ago, I still had a Windows partition on my computer for doing video editing.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was nothing for me. And if you look at some of my older videos, I did a series on Scene Lorella, which at the time was really the only stable video editor I found.
Yeah.
Because like a year ago, even Kden Live, and I couldn't get any of them to stay open for more than 30 seconds without crashing.
Mm-hmm.
Scene Lorella, it has some real nice advanced features, but it's just so weird. It was very hard to figure out how it works. So I did a lot of video tutorials on it, but I don't even really use it anymore. I've been using Kden Live. But about a year ago, I switched over. I don't even use any software in Windows anymore. Kden Live gives you majority of the basic video editing features you need. And I also, like you guys said, I use Blender a lot for a lot of effects, and it has some video editing capabilities. And as of right now, I still think that Kden Live can be more stable.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as features, a lot of them are there. I feel that the only thing that open source is really lacking as far as video editing now, besides being a little more stable, is motion tracking stuff. There's really not very much of that. Signorella has like one little feature, but it's not very good. But there's a lot of things that are incorporated with motion tracking. And I just hope that that's the next thing that comes. But just in the last year to 2 years, it's come such a long way, and that just shows how fast that open source can grow. That 2 years ago there was almost nothing, and now there's some pretty good stuff out there.
I noticed that you've been doing a lot of Blender videos lately. You're doing the lemon mouth thing
seeing.
That's definitely on a side note. Another one of the programs that I have on my to-do for as far as watching this stuff, because Blender's been one thing I've always wanted to get into as well. I've seen, speaking of the Cine Sings the Blues that we spoke of before, I've seen some things where it has been 2D art put on 3D. I've even seen some tutorials out there with Inkscape, using 2D Inkscape things in Blender, kind of like doing a hodgepodge of sort of a Flash thing. And so that's definitely one of the things on my to-do list to look at. So I guess I'm curious now, with doing all this stuff, are you in a band? Do you make music aside from what you do on the videos? I mean, what's the story there?
I tell people all the time, I am definitely not a musician. Years ago, back in my Windows days, I tried... Since I did video, I wanted to be able to make my own music instead of using other people's music. And back then, I bought a bunch of these cheap little programs. I don't know if you've heard them. They're called like Dance EJ and Techno EJ. You buy them for $20 and they come with a bunch of loops and you can mix music. And it was just horrible, cheap sounding techno music back then. Now I still play. I'm not a musician, but I love messing with the software. And over the last year or so, every couple of days, I'll just sit down and throw together something just for fun. And I posted some of those songs that I made up online. And just about a week ago, I got a really, really nice little email from a viewer who told me he couldn't stop listening to one of the tracks and how it reminded him of a band called Coil, which I am not too familiar with Coil, but I'm a huge Nine Inch Nail fan, and I know that they had done some Nine Inch Nail remixes, so I was familiar with the name. So that meant a lot to me that someone said that my music sounded like a band that Nine Inch Nail thought was good enough to remix one of their songs.
Really?
And so in the last week or so, I started, I have all these songs that I made on my computer, which are, I never really thought were that good, but obviously some people might like them. So I'm starting to, every time I upload a tutorial video, I'm going to try to upload one of those songs at the same time and put the project files so people can remix them if they want. You know, I figure I made them, why not post them online? So if someone is interested in them, they can use it in a video or remix it. Oh. And if no one uses it, no one uses it.
Okay. Well, and on that note, like what other kind of bands and music do you like? I mean, you know, they said you sound like Nine Inch Nails or whatever. I mean, and I'm talking like across the board, like CC music or, you know, actually it'd be nice to hear both, but are there like, you know, just your favorite regular bands or Creative Commons artists or, you know, that you're interested in?
Sure. Like I said, I've been a huge Nine Inch Nail fan for about 15 years now. Which is great because Nine Inch Nails, their last three albums were released under the Creative Commons. So it's great to see a band that I've always loved kind of going in the same direction that I think things should be going. Mm-hmm. And Nine Inch Nails has also released the mix tracks for a majority of their songs and have a whole site set up, remix.nin.com, where fans can upload their remixes and people can vote and rank on them. And that's been up for a while.
So definitely, I was only aware of two albums that were Creative Commons. What are the three?
I want to say, off the top of my head, Year Zero, Ghosts, and The Slip as well, I believe.
Yeah, I know The Slip was. I didn't know Year Zero was. I mean,
I'm pretty sure Year Zero was, because I think that was the album that even on the remix album, Year Zero Remixed, I think that was the album that he used a fan's remix on.
Yeah, I want to say
that one
I heard
was
the
released
same thing.
On Interscope.
Was it? Am I yeah. wrong?
Maybe it was after that album that he decided, because I remember there was a whole article about the fact that he was just like, after Interscope, he was like, I just want to release the stuff out there, I don't care. And then someone turned him on to Creative Commons music, and he was like, oh, okay, that works. You know,
right. Well, I know that Ghosts was the first album after he was unlicensed, and that one's all instrumental, and that was the first one. So maybe there are only two, but I know that he has at least released the mix tracks for other albums. I could be wrong about them, the other Creative Commons, because there were a few songs from when he was still under a record label that he at least released for remixing. They weren't released under necessarily the Creative Commons. So,
have you ever tried doing any of the remixes from his stuff on there? I know, I think I've seen a video where you just kind of used one as an example and just kind of showing how to, you know, you can snap the sound files together and everything. But have you ever really sat down and just kind of messed with one? You know, seriously?
Yeah, I've played with them, but I don't think I ever liked any of them enough to actually save. Actually, I did. I think I've uploaded two songs to the remix site. One of them was a remix that tracks he released, and then one was basically like a cover of an older song that I uploaded. But no, not too much. I've played with it, but nothing that I've actually saved because I thought it was good enough to save.
Have you ever seen the site? It's called Compose. And it's essentially the same sort of idea, a site where you can host the files and share them, and people can download them as remixes, and you can do public remixes and collaborations and other such things like that. I think.
What is it, like compose.org or?
It's compoz.com, I think.
That sounds familiar. Let me look at the site and see if it looks familiar.
I just recently started using it, and it's one of those things where it's handy, but I just wish it had a player in it, because like the Nine Inch Nails one has the way that you can play them directly on the site, and this one has a player too, but I think they came out around the same time, so I found that interesting. I was just wondering if you had heard about it.
No, I haven't. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
Speaking of sites, and also I was thinking about this earlier when I asked about whether or not people had asked for different tutorials. But there's we've talked about for the last couple of weeks on the show, audiotool.com.
Oh,
and,
right.
I made my first little track on that.
He's a musician now.
And I started working on a second. Actually, I used to be in a band back in the day, but haven't in a while. But anyway, I found it really confusing, mostly because I don't know anything about the different drum machines and mixers and stuff that was there. I just would like pull loops in and hope that it worked, and if it didn't, I would delete it. But a video about audiotool.com would be pretty sweet.
That would be. Are you familiar with that site, Chris?
I am not. I'm looking at it right now. I've never been here before. Is it like, once you get into it, is it like a track editor? Because I've been to websites before that are kind of like a track editor where you can pull in.
No, it's crazy nuts. What it is, do the on the top right-hand side, click the launch tool or the launch button. And what it does is it opens up a window. And I gushed over this just the last podcast. But you don't even have to have an account really to start up, but it helps because then you can save stuff. So what it is you get basically a studio table, and all it starts out with is a master input or master output. And on the right-hand side, you can drag over actual recreations of like an 808 or a a synthesizers. You have guitar pedal effects. You can upload audio, and it's essentially it hooks them all together. You have a mixing board, so you can do multi-tracking, and essentially
very fancy.
Yeah, and you can essentially run all these vintage and some new pieces of equipment, and do your own little like studio thing, and and like Doug was saying, it was hard for him to figure out. Like I've worked with an 808 in the past, so I knew what I was looking for on that. And I've had to hook up multiple pieces of equipment to different run them through things and effects and other such things. But I mean, the environment is basically pretty hardcore. It's like working with the actual stuff, and it's pretty cool. And
I'm definitely going to bookmark that.
Yeah, and Doug's actually beat me to the punch on this one. I have a couple ones in I have a couple of them in draft right now, but I haven't put anything out yet. And Doug, you said you're already working on your second song.
Yeah. Now the drafts, you can make the drafts public. Are you?
That's true.
No, I don't know. Are they? My draft is public. Let's see if I can see yours. Or I think it's public. I can see it. So
yeah, it might not be.
Let me log out and see if I can see it.
But yeah, so essentially, it's just a electronic recording studio environment, right there. And the best part is as well is that. And this is one of the things that's kind of confusing. On the bottom, there's a toolbar you can scroll up, and then you can see the layers, and that's not there by default. Look at me teaching films by Chris. paying it forward. Down where the play button is and everything, you drag it up, and then.
I see. Okay.
And then when you start actually putting in audio, that's where you can add tracks and you can upload tracks. Or there's also on the top right hand corner, there's also a there's a little squiggle line. You click on that, and it shows you the open source library of stuff that people are sharing. And it's actually working with the site loopmasters.com, which I find surprising because Loopmasters charges for everything. I mean, I'm amazed they don't charge you to look at their site. So I'm really amazed that they have all this great open source Creative Commons loops that you can put in, and you can change the tempo around. And once you know the environment, it's pretty... It's pretty vast on what you can do. And uploading and importing audio was the one thing that I was having trouble with at first, but now I've figured out how to do that, and it's a fun site.
I've never figured out how to do that. That's what I want to do, is to upload some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But we can talk about that later.
Right. We're going to have to do it. This is like the second or third time we've talked about Audio Tool. We're just going to have to do a show where all we do is talk about Audio Tool one of these times, because it's what we go to. We always have to try and change the subject after we start messing with it.
Speaking of changing the subject. That's what I'm going to do. Just to clarify the whole remix thing on Year Zero, it says, this is Wikipedia, Reznor himself strongly supports fan-made remixes of songs from the album, as evidenced by his decision to upload every song in multi-track from the then-newly-launched Nine Inch Nails remix website. Instrumental versions of the songs on Year Zero are available at the site for download in multiple formats, including MP3, WAVE, GarageBand, and Ableton Live formats. Whatever Ableton Live formats is. That was an end quote. That wasn't obvious there. But anyway.
So it didn't necessarily say that it's Creative Commons. It's just up for remix.
Right, right. So
by proxy, he's saying from now on it is, it sounds like. I don't know. Maybe not.
Well, you can't redistribute them, I think.
That's true. That's true.
I mean,
because I have the Year Zero remixed album in front of me right now, and it actually comes as a dual disc. The second disc is a DVD with all the mixed tracks on it.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, cool.
So that's one thing we didn't mention, just so Chris sort of has an idea of why, you know, Ardour and things like that isn't important to us, is that we only play remixable Creative Commons. So there's a lot of stuff out there that's no derivatives, and occasionally that's frustrating because there's a really good band, but we only play stuff that people can remix. So hopefully there's
so the share alike.
Well, we'll do non-commercial as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
so basically, you know, the thing is, we'll say if, you know, you're just a person that wants to, you know, do a remix, throw it up on Jamendo or whatever, you don't have to look at our show notes or, you know, worry about the license. You know, you can do that. But if you want to use it for commercial purposes, you basically got to double check and make sure.
Right.
But that's one reason why that sort of the remixing and editing and stuff is really important from our perspective as a show. Not that I don't think that we've adequately covered that, but just for anybody new as well that doesn't really understand that that's sort of the aspect that we're coming from.
And I still want to state my fact that I always state that I think it's ironic that most of the stuff that is no derivative is stuff that uses a lot of samples. I always find that very strange that a lot of sampled stuff is considered no derivative by the artist. So, Chris, you're living down in Florida, correct?
That's correct.
First of all, screw you for your nice weather, because ours is changing back to winter up here in Wisconsin. You know, just a little just a little jab at you there. But what's the I mean, you're doing Creative Commons now. You said that you've got interest in it just by from, you know, the building off of open source technology and other such things, and then learned about Creative Commons. Have you discovered, like, is there more of a culture? Have you met anybody else? Like, I've met Doug here. About, you know, and we're both interested in Creative Commons, and it's a very small community. I mean, what's the Creative Commons culture like in Florida?
Almost non-existent, I would say.
Yeah.
I have a lot of friends around here who are really talented musicians, mm-hmm. and it's just that they don't know about it. And I try to talk to them about it, and they just don't seem to understand. And like a lot of them, they'll make music and they'll put it up on a website and tell people they can download it and stuff. And I'm just like, well, what license are you licensing it under? Because it's just like, if you're going to give it away for download, you might as well put it on the Creative Commons license so people know what they can and can't do with it.
Right.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
We need to just record somebody say that. And when we ask that question, just cut that in to change the location. And then, you know, like, well, in Wisconsin, the Creative Commons, I mean, but I think actually I used Wisconsin as an example, but there's actually a pretty decent culture around here, but it's not necessarily in music. It's sort of more out of the web development community.
Right.
And I don't know if that is common. I know that they do some things with their bar camps in Wisconsin that are not necessarily the way other places do it. So I wonder if the Creative Commons thing is a little bit different. They're very almost militant about the fact that bar camp should be free, as in beer and as in freedom, whereas other places charge for them. But that's just sort of a feeling of openness and access that I get from a lot of the web dev community. And the other thing too is the web dev community sort of overlaps with a bunch of other communities, and I don't know how common that is as well. Anyway, that was a long way to ask if it was just music that you were answering that for.
So. Well, mostly music. My best friend lives up in Sarasota, and it's funny because it's like he's my best friend, but I don't see him that often because he lives 2 hours north of me. But about the same time I was getting into Creative Commons, we went and hung out, and it turns out he is huge on Creative Commons. And he's a part-time photographer, but he talks about Creative Commons all the time, kind of like the way I talk about open source.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, most musicians, I'll give you another example, a friend of mine from high school, I'm still friends with her on Facebook. She uploaded some songs online about a week ago, and I really liked them, so I sent her a message saying I like her music. I said, have you thought about releasing it under the Creative Commons? Because I always ask artists, I know that. And her response was, I uploaded it to SoundCloud, so I think it is. Now, I'm not familiar with SoundCloud, so I went to the site, and they do have some Creative Commons, but I don't think everything on the site is Creative Commons. But it's kind of like, well,
it's a setting.
You're the artist.
Yeah, and it's
the artist. You decide what license it's under. So it just seems like a lot of artists just don't understand it, and like they're fine with putting their work up on a website for people to download, but they don't get the idea of licensing it so that people know what they can and can't do with it. It's just like it just doesn't make sense to me, but I guess it doesn't make sense to them that it doesn't make sense to me, and I try to educate people about it. And like I said, I'm going to continue to do that, and hopefully someday it will click in some of their heads, and they'll go, oh, hey, that's a great idea. I was talking to a friend of a friend, both of them are musicians, and we were talking about, you know, how nowadays record labels, you know, they're still around, but really a record label, anyone can set up a recording studio. Record labels are really there for marketing, in my opinion, and I was in a conversation with him about how great the internet is, how you don't really need a record label anymore to get your music out there. And he was completely agreeing with me. We're going on and on and on. I'm basically building up to a Creative Commons conversation. And then I said to him, I said, you ever think of uploading your music to like a Creative Commons site so people can share it? And he's just like, no, I don't think I'm into that. Just like, okay, end of conversation. It's just like, you're agreeing with me on everything, and I'm talking basically about the Creative Commons without saying it.
Right.
But then I say Creative Commons, and I try to explain what it is, and it's just kind of like, no, I'm just going to upload it to my website, and people can stream it from there. So I it doesn't make sense to me, but I guess it makes sense to them.
Yeah, like, where's that disconnect where it's like, no, I don't want to have the actual ownership license, but, I mean, I'll put it up because people should be able to have it. I don't know. It's
right.
There is a strange disconnect there, and that's one of the things. And the disconnect being, and we mention this all the time. We even had Eric from Creative Commons, the actual Creative Commons, on the show maybe about a month back, and I asked him specifically, and this is what most musicians think when you tell them this, is that if it's under Creative Commons, that means that it's free. And that's not the case, you know, and I had him state that. It's like, you can still charge for the music. You're basically protecting the music and giving the fans or the people that download it more of a, you know, more leeway, saying, yes, you can copy this and give it to your friends just as long as you don't use it in this specific way. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have to give it away for free. It's just, once they have it, you're not going to go, you can't give that to somebody on the internet. You know, or other such things like that. What you're basically saying is, you can, but let them know where you got it from. Let them know how to get
right.
it if they want to get it, or if they want to buy a physical copy. And that's really what where it separates. Whereas, for some reason, giving it away on your website is still okay, though. I don't understand
right.
where that separation
is. When it comes down to it, people who are going to download it for free are going to download it for free, and people who are going to buy it are going to buy it. I still, even though, the last few Nine Inch Nails albums, he puts up on his website for free download, and then usually it's $5 if you want to download the high-quality copies, the flat
right.
copies, and then it's usually $10 where you get that download and the CD, and then usually you'll have other packages, bigger packages. I always, you know, buy the CD. I'll pay the $10. Half the time, I don't open the CDs. Even before, mm-hmm. you know, he started doing that, I would go out to the store, buy the CD because I'm a fan. I want to support him. I want to collect him. I'll bring the CD home. I don't open it because it's like a collector thing for me, you know? And then I'll just go online and download the music anyway. I figure it's okay. I bought the CD. And just people don't realize that people are going to download it. They're going to download it. The people who are going to buy it are going to buy it because they like your work. And you might as well give them permission to share it. That just brings more people, more fans to you.
It really is kind of a collector's thing. And I guess I've realized that, but I've never really put it together in the fact, like, okay, I'm going to dork out here for a second. I collect toys, like vintage toys, recent toys. I never take them out of the box. I buy them and they're on a shelf right behind me. And that's what I do with them. And what I've noticed is because, like you said, most people, they don't, you know, they either do just get the CD and copy it, and then that's the last time they ever use it. But I've noticed that on more band sites and through Bandcamp, where now you can actually sell physical copies off Bandcamp, as well as they can download with it the digital files. But people have become a lot more creative with the physical copies of CDs, and they are becoming collector's items, because some of them you'll see they have crazy packaging, or they're like hand printed and they're, you know, limited runoffs and other such things as that. And that's true. That is one of the ways to look at it, is like make something collectible for the band, you know, to show that you're a fan. I mean, that's one of the things I'm working on right now, is not only getting LPs, which is funny. I mean, I just think it's funny to do LPs. I mean, I don't know anybody that can actually play one, but for some reason there's a resurgence of them. But
my parents can play them.
That's true. You can go over to your parents' house and listen to them. But there's some people out there that actually have, you can, if you have a spool of plastic, they will cut it up and make, like, little, they'll make records where they'll actually be able to make the records directly on like any type of plastic, whether it be clear or whatever. Like, they have specifics on their site, and you can do a short runoff of these LPs that are just on like crazy pieces of plastic. And I think that's awesome.
Wow.
Yeah. So there are little things like that. Like, you know, when people complain about, oh, you know, I never make any money off this. And it's like, well, then try. You know, try out some new things, because, like you said, people are going to download it anyway. Everybody knows how to. And also, have you seen that the record company's projected graph of where the music industry would be right now if it weren't for Napster?
Oh, go ahead, answer that question.
No, I haven't seen it, no.
Oh, it's awesome. You respond first, Duck.
Well, so there's this legal case that the RIAA has that's suing LimeWire for $75 trillion in damages. So I saw somebody that did the math over on maybe Ars Technica, but I heard it through Linux Outlaws. And that's more than the GDP for the entire planet. Like, the U.S. GDP is like a fifth of that.
They might as well have just said, we're going to sue you for some made-up number. Like,
yeah,
Brazoinkle.
It's like Dr. Evil when he goes back to like the 60s and asks for $100 billion and they just laugh at him.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's like they're trying to be mocked. I mean, what do they think they're doing about with that?
Well, and the other thing too is they actually had a graph that's with it. So what it does is it shows, you know, the incline, and there's ups and downs in the record industry. And then they have the graph separate with when Napster started and if Napster didn't start. And what it does from that point is the record industry goes down, and the regular, if it wouldn't have happened, like a straight shot up, like they would be making like multi 10 million times more than they ever did if Napster never existed, is basically what this chart shows. Like, it literally shoots right.
People would be wearing CDs for clothes,
yeah,
because they wouldn't have the money to pay for any, like, their houses would be made out of CDs.
It was comically made. I mean, seriously, it's like, I almost think somebody was just like, hey, can you make us a graph? And the person was just like, oh, yeah, how about this? You know, like, tee-hee. And they were like, that's brilliant. And then they used it. Because, seriously, there's no way that they could be serious with this. I mean, it shoots straight up. It was one step away from doing that thing like they do on cartoons where they keep drawing it right off of the page, like, onto the wall, because they've run out of room. They'd be making so much money, you know? And so, yeah, I was just wondering if you had seen that.
I haven't seen that. But the truth is, Napster, you know, might have been bad for the record labels, but I think it was a great thing for the musicians.
Exactly.
And there's some bands out there that are famous now. In fact, I was reading just a couple weeks ago on I think the Napster Wikipedia, talking about oh, I'm going to draw a blank now.
this guy happens to me all the time.
Radiohead. Radiohead, I guess, is a band that became famous through Napster. And a less-known band but still has a following was Dispatch. And it just gave a list of bands that may have never been noticed if it wasn't for Napster. And
I think Arctic Monkeys was another one.
Mm-hmm.
Which, they're still pretty indie, but, I mean, they're well-known. Like, they came out of total obscurity.
Right. And then you look at, you know, besides Napster, you look at OK Go, the band, mm-hmm. you know, the guys that run on the treadmills.
Right.
Yeah.
And they became famous from that that video that they shot. And they released that video online, and that's how they became famous, got their record label. And then when they came out with their newer album, I was reading, they wanted to do the same thing. They wanted to make a video and give it away for free, and the record label said no.
Right.
It's just like, that's how we got popular last time. Why would we not do that thing? And I just think it's just a control issue.
I think they actually dropped their label after that, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and then they did, I want to say they did crowdfunding maybe, or they did something, but I know that there was a huge thing where they were just like, okay, we're leaving our label. And it was like, that was supposedly what everybody's shooting for. They're like, okay, we'll give it away until we get signed, and then that's what we're going to do, and we'll be signed, and we'll be well-to-do. And then they found out, like, oh, we have absolutely no control over anything we want to do, and then they dropped them. Similar thing just happened recently with... oh, great, I'm going to forget her name. Amanda Palmer, who was on... Roadrunner Records, and basically they were always inhibiting and not letting her do things she wanted to, and they were taking things she did and not promoting them, whereas she was promoting them more online herself. Like, she got more known through word of mouth after being signed than the label did on anything, and she basically sued them and they let her out of her contract, and now she's promoting herself, and she just did a tour across the United States, and all through just internet connections and selling her stuff on Bandcamp, which she would let you stream the entire album, all those kinds of things. And it was all just through word of mouth, and she did it herself, which brings us back to the whole, like, do you really need a record label sort of thing? I think you just need somebody that has the time and the gumption. That's right, I use the word gumption. I love
that
word.
Nobody was questioning you, Tom.
I know, but as I was saying it...
The truth is, if you're a good artist and people hear your music or see your art, whatever it is, if you're good, all you need to do is have people see your work or hear your work. And that's what it comes down to. I mean, and the internet is great for that. And going back to, musicians that get upset with their record labels, if you look at the majority of musicians, as they get towards the, once they start getting popular, they all start having issues with the record labels. And I know I keep on going back to Nine Inch Nails, but Nine Inch Nails, he had arguments and lawsuits with every record label he was ever with. And then you look at, you know, a famous one is Prince, having them change his name to a symbol. It's just like, you
right.
basically sign your life away. And everyone's like, musicians that are starting out, they're like, oh yeah, I gotta get signed. And then they get signed, they're like, I don't wanna be signed. It's just like, Look ahead, think about this. You know, not that it's necessarily bad to get signed, but it's, if the internet's there and if you're good, you're good, and people will hire you to play music, and you're going to make money if you're good, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and there's another thing I was going to say, too, is, you know, all you have to do is go somewhere, perform, and then the guy from Maroon 5 or Christina Aguilera will turn around and say they want to run you. I mean, isn't that the new game show that's out there right now? I'm sorry. Never mind. I was going for something funny, and I didn't get it. I didn't want to make an American Idol reference. So, but yeah, no, that's because that's the way the music industry is going. I find that show, I'm sorry, I'm just obsessed with, like, I want that show to start so I can go, what the hell is this show? Because I'm so confused as to what it is. It's a contest, it's got four singers in it, I don't know, I don't get it. Sorry.
I think I saw a commercial for that the other day.
Yeah.
I don't really get it either.
It's called The Voice. I don't really, because then later on they're like, oh, I guess they create a band and have them battle each other, like maybe they, I don't know, like beat the crap out of each other or something, I don't know. That would be
more
entertaining.
Combat.
Yeah.
They have to face Scorpion.
Oh, so okay.
I wanted to touch on a couple things, Napster and such related. One, just for people that don't know who Amanda Palmer is, she is the one of the two in the Dresden Dolls.
That's right.
And also, I take a little bit of exception. I don't know if Radiohead is claiming that Napster made them or somebody else is claiming that. But first of all, they were out. They existed 14 years before Napster. And Creep was a big single that was released in 92. And then the bands and OK Computer both came out. And OK Computer came out 2 years before Napster. So I think that's a lot of bollocks. Some of these other bands, maybe, and sure, Radiohead may have like embraced it, but I think that's another case of like Nine Inch Nails, you know, where there's a established artist and they're sort of you know, using different media. I don't think that's a case of Napster made Radiohead.
No, well, I mean, I know that Radiohead was right after, I mean, it was around the same time period where Nine Inch Nails released their stuff, and then they came out with, what was that Over Rainbows or something Rainbows, and they released that for the Name Your Own Price thing.
Yeah, well, that's true, but I'm just saying that's 10 years after they released OK Computer. I mean, mm-hmm. They were a huge band already.
All because of that one crunchy guitar part on that one song. I mean, seriously.
That's a good song.
I didn't like that song. Well, it was the one part. It was the one part, and it was like everybody just loved the cha-chunk, which is like, you know, I think it's so funny because it's so easily creatable, and they actually made it the tent pole of the song, and everybody loved it. Like, that was just like the one part of the song, because I thought the song itself was kind of just like, dude, wake up, you know. And then they do the thing, like, even when they were blasting off, like the little heroin looking guitar guy, they're just kind of just sitting there looking and just, but anyway, that was the 90s, you know, my feelings on the 90s.
Paranoid Android wasn't a bad song. I mean, I am by no
means. That was a good, that, no, the album after that was very good.
The Bends, or
the Bends,
the Bends is like an EP or something, but it's got six singles. Who releases six singles from an album? Radiohead does.
This is true.
Half their album came out in singles. Anyway, enough Radiohead talk.
Enough
we
Radiohead
talked to, this is for Chris and anybody who didn't listen to the show we did with Steven a while back. But this guy that I know and we had on the show a while back who lives in Boston, he actually went to school with Napster boy Sean Fanning. Not that really matters that much, but it's kind of cool, I think.
Yeah. The guy that Justin Timberlake played? I still think that's so funny that he got Justin Timberlake to play him in The Social Network.
Oh.
You know? And the other guy gets like some nobody nerdy guy, and then, hey, sexy back is the other dude. Anyway. So, okay, now reeling it back into, you know, no longer calling Justin Timberlake sexy back.
Your name. He's going to be like Prince and change his name.
He should. Well, the thing is, he could also be Dick in the Box guy, too, so. But
that can be his porn name. You know?
That's very true, unless it's already taken. I mean, you never know in this day and age. Many porn stars, you know.
We'll have to do a show on Creative Commons porn sometime.
Oh my god, I feel like that would be the ugliest porn ever. I don't know why, but that's just the first thing that popped into my head.
All right, anyway.
So Chris.
Yes.
If you had to choose a porn name. No.
We haven't come up with DJ names. I was thinking that exact same thing, just as you said it. I was like, we should drop the DJ names and come up with porn names.
Yeah, we used to try and for people that we spoke with, ask them what their DJ name would be if they had to choose one. And one of them chose a name that was already taken but still a brilliant name, where he chose DJ Tanner.
Yeah.
which I thought was awesome, you know, from Full House. I don't know if you watch, if you're familiar with Full House.
I was about to say, isn't that the girl from Full House?
Yeah, and there's actually a DJ in California, and it's a girl, and her name is DJ Tanner, which I thought was brilliant. But anyway, that's not what I was going to ask. I'm sure yours would
Does
be...
Does she live in San Francisco? Because that would
I
be even
I think
better.
She might. That would be awesome if she did. But who knows? I mean, well,
this is sounding all way too made up now.
I know it's. I've seen pictures.
Maybe
I've seen
somebody.
Pictures.
Yeah, I mean, somebody could have just named their kid DJ Tanner to like.
I'm sure people have.
Yeah.
If I had a last name,
Of the show.
Right.
Which that's kind of lame.
Right.
But if they were already named DJ Tanner.
And hopefully they have an Uncle Jesse. But
that would be my DJ name, Uncle Jesse.
Uncle Jesse. Uncle Jesse. I like that. I like that.
I'm gonna put that up on the site right now.
Okay, you do that. And speaking of sites, Chris, look at me trying to reel it in. You decided to go with the license on your site. What made you choose that particular license? You just go with straight up attribution share alike, correct? Or is it just attribution?
I like to get credit for what I do.
Okay.
But I also want people to be able to share and change stuff. So a lot, you know, my videos are tutorials, so I really don't know what people are going to manipulate in it, but still might as well.
Yeah. And have you, what kind of, I don't have your YouTube page up right now, but I mean, how big is your following these days?
I think just a couple weeks ago, I hit 3,000 subscribers.
Nice. Nicely done. I mean, I know that you get quite a few comments on a lot of your videos. Which ones do you think are more popular than the others? I know that you've been doing a lot of bash command videos recently, along with the
Blender things. That's kind of what I started out doing the Unix command line bash stuff, which is what I'm probably the best at, because I use it every day.
Mm-hmm.
So I do a lot of those, but I probably get most of my questions on Blender, because I just think that 3D stuff intrigues people, but people don't realize how long it takes to learn all that stuff. Because before I started using Blender, back when I used to use Windows, I used 3D Studio Max, and then when I came to Linux, I started playing with Blender, and the interface of Blender is absolutely great, but it's very different. But at least I had the knowledge, the concept of 3D editing. So that's what I probably get most questions on.
Yeah.
And a lot of times those are just things I can't answer in like a simple little comment reply. So I have to do a video on it or just tell them that I don't know.
I'm amazed. I mean, when I have to sit down and do video, I know that it's going to be a painstaking project. And I mean, I guess since you come from the video background, it's not. But I mean, just again, the amount that you put it out and just, you know, editing it and setting it up and everything, it's just like I'm just flabbergasted by it. I mean, it's just, and inside of those, most of the time, it's you videotaping something that you've been working on or recreating something that you worked on, obviously, because you have to try it out first. You can't just turn it on and go, okay, let's do this. So I mean,
that's what I do.
Yeah, that's true. But where do you find the time, for crying out loud? Do you just live in your mother's basement, or what's going on here?
Well, the truth is, luckily, I am a firefighter as my full-time job.
Really?
And I work 24 hours, and then I have 48 hours off. So I have a lot of free time during the day.
Oh, that's cool.
So I'm either at the gym or playing on my computer.
Okay. All right. Well, that answers my question.
That makes it. That's the main reason. I also, I do the stuff before. Sometimes you'll watch videos and you can tell that I haven't done it before because I'm messing up like crazy. And the truth is, I usually, you know, the first go is what I go with. And you'll see quite often I mess up in my videos, and I apologize. And I don't even a lot of times edit it out because it's just I just have so much I want to get out. I don't have time to edit it all. So it's just like I record it. I throw an intro and a little outro, and sometimes I throw the wrong intro on there, and people comment on that. Like I'll say it's a Blender video, but I throw a Bash intro on it. I've done that at least 5 times, and so I don't spend as much time as far as putting the quality into the videos because I'm more about the volume. I've tried the spending more time. It's just I have so much that I want to get out there. There's so much in my head that I need to get out that I record it. And as long as the audio comes out good, I'm posting it, you know?
Yeah.
It's funny, especially it's like with the programming stuff. Lots of times I'll look at a video, like I said, I've been doing this for a year and a half. I look at stuff I did 6 months ago with programming, and I realize I posted a video on that, and I explain it, but I'm not really explaining it right, and it's kind of embarrassing if I get the point across, but it's just like, yeah, that's kind of right, but now I know better, and I know that's not really the best way to do it, or what I'm saying isn't really 100% correct, and I'm like, ugh, maybe I'll revisit that video and do it over again now, you know?
And now with the, I mean, how... Did you make the site yourself, first of all? Because, I mean, I guess that's another thing that you'd be doing. I mean, I see you have tutorials on PHP. I mean, are you building the site off of PHP and then...
Yes and no. I am pretty good at programming and scripting. But as far as web design, I am not very artistic in that aspect.
Okay.
And actually, if you scroll down to the bottom of any of my pages, I use free templates from a template page.
Okay.
They're all released under the Creative Commons for both commercial and non-commercial use, as long as I have that little tag down at the bottom of the page.
That's what I was wondering.
So that's it. I mean, I swap out the images. I did the picture at the top of the with the penguins and stuff, which was actually just an image I grabbed off of Google, and I'm not sure what that was licensed under, so I probably shouldn't be using it.
Another one of those revisited things.
I manipulated it and stuff, but I can't remember. I nowadays I would have checked to make sure that was under Creative Commons. I probably didn't check that when I did that,
yeah,
though.
It's been grandfathered. I feel that way about music that I've downloaded, too. Like, well, I do Creative Commons stuff now, but I already have this, so...
You're thinking it's karmically you're paying for it by going, I don't do that anymore now, music I illegally downloaded.
Well, I mean,
so don't judge me.
Like how long has it been up on your site? I mean, you've kind of already... If someone cared, they would have already asked you to take it down.
Like, right. Those penguins are going to send you an email and go, take our picture off your site. That apparently
and
be in my penguin voice.
I completely manipulated the image and threw, it's like I adjusted the colors and stuff. So it doesn't even really, not that that really means anything legally,
that
but I did a lot of work
right.
to the image. It's not the original image.
So your online handle, Metal X.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, tell the reason I'm asking this is because I love metal, and I try to talk about metal in terms that irritates Tom at least once.
Yeah, that's because the metal you like is like that grindcore, whatever the hell crap.
I don't like grindcore. I might have played like one grindcore song. I think grindcore is hilarious.
Yes.
I don't like it for its musical value, though. But so along with telling us about your handle, you also have to tell us your feelings on Gene Simmons. That's a requirement. So.
Well, as far as Gene Simmons, I really don't have an opinion. I've seen his reality show once or twice, and I'm familiar with Kiss vaguely. You know, I'm familiar with the music, but I don't know much about the band. As far as my name, Metal X 1000, my screen name or handle or whatever you want to call it, it kind of is part of a few different things. A couple of years ago, I was looking for kind of a cool, you know, got to come up with a cool screen name. And I actually got the metal portion of it from a Nine Inch Nail cover of a Gary Numan song called Metal.
Right.
So I guess I was just listening to that. I'm like, metal's a cool sound, but I can't just be metal. So I got to be something else. And originally I went with digital metal, which I actually like better than Metal X 1000.
Mm-hmm.
But I created a junk mail account under Metal X 1000. And I think I started creating accounts under stuff that I thought were going to be junk accounts. And then they ended up not being. So that name stuck.
Nice.
And just Metal X 1000, and the reason I like digital metal better is because I've always hated when people pick a screen name, it's not available, and they just throw numbers at the end. And that's essentially what I ended up doing. But it was supposed to be for my junk mail account, and my regular screen name was digital metal, which eventually just died off.
So do you like metal? We talked about Nine Inch Nails, which is vaguely metal-ish.
Right, it's like a metal, what's the word, industrial type, yeah. Electronic, it's a mixture of stuff, I guess. I like, depends on the type of metal, I'm not into what I call grunting music. where you can't understand what the singer's saying because he's hur, 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 hur. You know?
That sounds like pirate metal right there.
Yeah, I don't like pirate music either. But it's like a lot of times I like metal music, but the singers I may not like. I like a lot of music, but I only love a few things, and Nine Inch Nails is. I'm kind of, like I said, I'll listen to a lot of things, but I always end up going back to Nine Inch Nails for the most part. I also, and this is kind of on the other end of the spectrum, I would say another one of my favorite artists is Tom Petty, although I haven't listened to him too much lately.
He just had an album out a couple months ago, didn't he?
I don't know.
I want to say I saw him perform on Saturday Night Live, I want to say around the fall, and he released a new album, and it was actually pretty heavy for him. It was pretty rock and roll. I don't know if he was with the Heartbreakers or not, but you should take a look. I think he released an album not more than a few months ago, and it was pretty good for him. It was still melodic, but it seemed a lot heavier than a lot of the stuff he's done, you know, comparatively. So you should take a look. I don't remember what it's called though, but I remember not being kind of impressed by it. I almost said not being impressed by it.
You know who knows the name of that album, Tom?
The internet?
Wikipedia.
Wikipedia. See, Doug does Wikipedia Mojo. More than anything else.
Yeah, it's Mojo.
Mojo, okay.
And apparently it peaked at number 2 in the U.S. somehow.
Yeah, there was a single that was out. And the thing is that you may not have... I've heard the single, and I want to say you may not have known it was him unless you knew. So...
Huh. Well...
It is with the Heartbreakers.
It is with the Heartbreakers. Okay, but is he using the name for that? That's what I wonder, because I don't think he's actually used the Heartbreakers name forever. I think it's just been Tom Petty, but he's had the same backup band.
Couldn't tell you.
Yeah, I don't know. Come on, you can tell me. No, just kidding.
Well, I mean, they have a nice little chart of the studio albums of the Heartbreakers.
Oh,
I'd actually have to like read some text to see if they, you know, called.
Nah.
I wonder if I could go, if there's a Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers
website
on Wikipedia.
Yeah, like an article about them that doesn't just redirect. No, it's wait, is this the same article? I'll have to find this out later. I think this might be the same article.
All right then. Well,
anyway,
Chris, I got a couple more things I want to ask you.
Sure.
One of them being, we like to ask all the people that we talk to, and this is how we've met a lot of the people and gotten our foot in the door with a lot of people. We will say, is there anybody you can think of that you think we should interview, or, you know, maybe some people in the Creative Commons or Floss community that you think we should try contacting for the show and talking to?
Well, the names that come to mind are big names in the Creative Commons. I don't know. I'm sure you've heard of Kevin McLeod from Income Tech.
Right.
And Brad Sucks is another big one. I don't even know. Is Brad Sucks his real name, or is that just his website name or band name?
That's his band name. And he's been around for a long time. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Brad made his name, but I don't think Sucks is probably his
name. No, right. No, Brad is the one that he appended to the name. He really goes by Sucks.
It's Tom.
His name wasn't Richard, right?
Yes, that's true. Nice.
Yeah, if you can get a hold of Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails. But no, I don't know of any musicians off the top of my head that I personally know. Like I said, most musicians I know, it's like they, I don't know. Like I said, I gotta just beat it in their head. Creative Commons, Creative Commons, Creative Commons, Creative Commons.
Right.
Well, tell them that if they'll release an album under Creative Commons, that we'll interview them. Maybe that'll.
There you go.
Maybe that'll sway them.
I'll mention that.
And they'll go, no way, really?
Those guys.
I try to get people, like, if any of my friends do any music on the Creative Commons, it's like, I will definitely, not that it's a huge thing, but I've got 3,000 subscribers on YouTube. I'll post your video. A couple hundred people will hear your song.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, I'm also hoping, like I said, I used to do video work, like wedding stuff. I hope to start doing that again in the future, not necessarily weddings, but other stuff. And if I do start doing that and start getting some income, I'll probably hire some of my friends to do the music, pay them as long as they release it under the Creative Commons.
Oh.
I, you know, anything I can do to support it. You know, I release my video stuff under Creative Commons, so I have to do the music Creative Commons. So I usually use Kevin McLeod from Income Tax website's music. And he's got a big variety of stuff. But if I can start paying a friend, you know, a portion of the money I'm making to do videos to, hey, I know you make music on the side, here's a chance for you to make money and support the Creative Commons, you know, I'm all for that. So maybe I'll start doing that in the next year or so.
Yeah, actually, I like that. That's really, and I like the fact that you're still a pretty good advocate of it and looking for different ways to get people involved and using what you have to do it. So, kudos for that. I like that. And and on top of that, is there anything else? I mean, we've talked about your video tutorials and your website. Is there anything else that you do that you would like to tell everybody before we go today, or promote, or, you know, give a shout out to, or, you know, say hi to your mom, or any of that kind of stuff?
I'll say, you know, once again, my website's filmsbychris.com. It's Chris with a K, which is actually how my name is spelled.
Right.
And I
it's not a like junk said, mail account that you started and you just stuck with it.
That's how Crisscross spells it too, right?
That's true.
I believe so.
Yeah.
I actually used to be one of the Chris's from Crisscross. You caught me.
Sweet.
If I could go back and do it again, Jump would be released under Creative Commons.
Ah, you still wearing your clothes backwards and all that kind of stuff too?
Yes, but not on purpose.
Nice.
Was it ever on purpose? That's what I think.
Yeah, come by my site. I've done a lot of tutorials on music software, open source software in the past. I haven't done a lot on music lately because it was always a pain to record a lot of those videos because I couldn't record the audio directly. But now with my new setup with Jack and Pulse Audio working together, I can actually work with those programs and be recording to the video at the same time, where before I used to have to record the audio separate and then try to synchronize it later. So that will help me do more tutorials on music software. So I'll be having more of that. And I guess as far as shout outs, I guess I'll just say to my wife, Jennifer, I love you and thank you for all your support.
Nice. And I'm definitely going to have to check out those Jack videos because they've just been really helpful and I want to be able to do a lot more stuff like that and see what other kind of things you're discovering for me. I love it because you do the work for me. I don't have to.
Yeah. Speaking of that, let me know when you do that, audio tools or audiotools.com. Video, because I'll watch that one.
I'll check that out.
There you go. We've added another request to the many backlog of videos that you already have on your plate.
With the new setup of Jack and Pulse Audio working together, I could actually probably hook that website we were just talking about.
Oh, right.
I forget the name already. I could probably hook that into the other programs, have the audio output from that go through other effects racks and stuff that I have on my computer.
That would be cool.
Oh my God. Well, it just blew my mind.
and so you're saying that you're actually able to use it, a browser in Jack,
yeah,
is what
well,
you're telling me.
The video that I did showing how to set it up, which I hope that video, I felt when I was recording it that I was making it more confusing than it should have been.
Mm-hmm.
I played a YouTube video and put it through a rack program called Rack-A-Rack and started adding effects to it.
Just recently discovered Rack-A-Rack. Brilliant program. Love it.
Yeah, I just discovered it 3 weeks ago, and I love it. In fact, I'm using it right now to boost the audio from my microphone because my microphone's usually pretty low.
Really? And you're running one of the sound bank files in the background, and your voice is going through like the Lil Blues effect or
whatever. Why are you not auto-tuning your voice? If you're doing all of this, you should be auto-tuning it.
Which is actually something I just started messing with last week too. And once I get a little better at it, I'm going to do a video on auto-tuning and voice. Like basically you press keys on the keyboard and the synthesizer bends the pitch of your voice and stuff like that. These are all things I've been playing with, but I haven't done videos on yet because I need to get better at it first.
So when we have you back on, I expect that interview to be done in auto-tune the entire time.
Sure, sounds great.
Or at least with the tuning, do that one because I actually have a piece of work I'm doing right now where I love the take, but for some reason we're doing a slide guitar and the slide guitar just doesn't hit right. So I want to do, I know in Pro Tools you can do the, you know, tune it down or like take a section of it and kind of detune it. So
right.
That's kind of what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, there's two applications. One that bends it to the synthesizer keys you're pressing, and then another program which is more of an auto-tune type program that basically whatever's coming in, it locks it into the closest note.
Cool.
So, and I've only played with them a little bit, and I got to get better at understanding it so I can explain it better, basically.
Sweet. Well, I got to wrap this up before I just start making requests over and over again, because there's I got tons of things. I'm really happy I met you, and ever since I've been using the videos that you have for Ardour, I wanted to get you on, and we're really happy that we were able to get you here, and the fact that you're a Creative Commons open source advocate is a bonus. So, Chris, thanks for coming on today. And
yeah, thanks a lot.
This has been another Music Manumit podcast at musicmanumit.com.